market.
The S&P, the ASX stocks.
This is Motley Fool Money.
Welcome to Motley Fool Money, the podcast that looks forward to AI because God knows Scott and I need it desperately. I'm Andrew Page, and with me, as always, is Scott Phillips.
G'day, Andrew. G'day, Phil's AI.
Artificial intelligence. Well, we is what the cool kids. We could do with any kind of intelligence, let's face it.
Speaking of which, what are we going to talk
about? Well, we're going to go a little bit techie. We're going to talk about Facebook. Shares there hit an all-time high, and they had a cracker of a quarterly result. So we'll talk a bit about that.
Speaking of high tech,
we're going to talk about Woolies and Coke and the battle of the brands. These two titans are really tussling it out over a shelf space and a whole bunch more. We'll talk about that as well. We're going to talk, speaking of Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg and Elon Musk at loggerheads. In fact, they're trading blows over artificial intelligence.
One of my favorite tweets of all time, so stay tuned, Phil.
It's brilliant. We'll talk about that. And then I'm going to get on my high horse and talking about where will the market be by Christmas and what a ridiculous thing that is to waste your time on. But first, Facebook. Now, mate, I remember when Facebook listed.
Yeah.
And I remember you saying,
be nice.
Why would you invest in this thing for? Now, to be fair, I said exactly the same thing. Yeah.
Mate, this is a spectacularly successful business operation. Yep. I wasn't necessarily at that point even saying Facebook was a terrible concept, terrible platform. Obviously, everyone used it. It was great. Yep. It wasn't going away anytime soon. I just can't work out who the hell, I couldn't at the time, and frankly still can't, work out who the hell is clicking on all these bloody ads that is giving Facebook so much money.
And they are plenty of people doing. It has been said that of all incremental ad dollars, Google and Facebook collect 80% of that. Think about, now we want, well, is there any wonder why newspapers and TV stations are doing it so tough when they are just hoovering up so much of the of those rivers of gold?
Exactly.
But I was the same. It was never against Facebook, but I remember it had a nosebleed of a valuation when it listed on the market.
And yet.
Say about 100, the price was 100 times its earnings, which, you know, to put that in context, the market average is usually around 15 or so.
Hit me with some stats.
The share price halved not long after listing. Oh, man, could you imagine?
See, I was right.
Then, you know, so I was doing victory laps thinking, I told you. Anyway, so last night they had a cracker of a quarterly result. Shares hit an all-time high up around 100. Just shy of $170 per share. That's up 44% this year alone.
Mate, it's probably about six or seven times its low post-IPO.
Yeah, it just would have been an incredible investment. Jesus. The company's worth $500 billion,
half a trillion dollars,
this monster of a company.
That's not bad walking around money.
It's not bad at all, is it? So it's all. So what was really driving the result was ad dollars, but it was the mobile app that's getting plenty of attraction there.
Have you ever clicked on an ad on Facebook?
I don't even use Facebook, if I'm being honest. I'm a Twitter man.
You're a man of the people, Andrew. You're a man of the people.
But I don't even use that too much. I got nothing to say.
You're no use to me. Liam, mate, talk the voice of the new generation.
Yes.
Facebook. Do you click on Facebook ads?
Rarely. I think really? I might have clicked on a couple of promoted things in my feed once or twice. Right. But generally, I feel like it's if I see the promoted symbol in the top left-hand corner in that faded grey writing, I tend to ignore it on principle.
Yeah, good point. You know what I really love is those ones who say, you're a 35 to 44-year-old man in Sydney. You would love this thing. It's like, that is a really, really ordinarily targeted ad.
Mate, isn't it like those late-night sexting services you see advertised on TV? It's like, who the hell is clicking? Who the hell? Anyway, that's just me.
That almost sounded authentic. You almost sound like a bloke who'd never done that, which is really impressive.
It seems to me it's one of those things that is self-evident. Clearly, people are, because otherwise the numbers wouldn't be there. So,
by the way, just a really quick tangent. That's a really smart investing lesson. You know, Webjet, I ignored Webjet for such a long time because I kind of went, who the hell pays $20 a click when you go and book on the airline's own websites? The answer, unfortunately, is everybody.
Yep.
And I missed out on a really, frankly, luckily we did recommend it for Hidden Gems, our small cap service, but way, way, way too late. When I finally got it through my thick head that just because I didn't do it, someone was, and doing it a lot and doing it in larger and larger numbers.
The academics call it reference bias. You know, it's that idea that you sort of use your own sort of personal outlook and situation, easily accessible sort of examples to basically inform your whole outlook. And it can be really dangerous.
Now, speaking of reference bias, I'm sitting here and in front of me is a bottle of liquid gold, Coke Zero itself.
Coke Zero, mate, I hope you've stocked up because they're not going to be selling that for much longer.
How's that for a segue?
That was a beautiful
segue. We've been doing this for over a year. We finally managed to get it right. Mark this day, fools.
We're already doing victory laps on it as well. Yep.
We can stop now. Thanks for listening. We're done.
Okay. So, that's Facebook.
All right.
On to Woolies and Coke.
Oh, come on. We have one there.
No, before we go.
I gave you the perfect segue, and then you went, Well, that's Facebook. How about Woolies?
Mate, I need to tie a nice little bow on these things before we
just go back.
I just want to have to ask you one question, and I think it's something that people would like to ask.
Snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. Liam is going to give you an absolute hiding after this episode.
I think anyone listening to that goes, okay, that's really interesting.
But I've got something to go back to. Hang on.
It's $170 a share. it's 44 times earning at this point in time.
Yes.
Okay, you guys got it horribly wrong, but is now, have you capitulated? Is now the time to buy? Is it too late? Have I missed the guy? That's the question I think we need to answer. You need to answer, I should say.
Thank you very much. Mate, I'm not going to bet against Facebook. It has proven itself to be an incredibly sticky, incredibly profitable social network. While ever Zuck's there and trying to do his best, I think there stands a very good chance of him being able to capitalize on what's available. And frankly, once you get to a certain size, if you can keep your culture, they have so much money now to spend on R&D. They're spending more on R&D now than probably they were doing in revenue 3-4 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, the size of the prize. Now, frankly, big businesses get old and they get calcified and they get disrupted. So Facebook will probably face that one day. I reckon it's too early and I don't own any Facebook shares. I probably should have. No, I'm not going to rush out and buy him tomorrow, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's to my own detriment. But I wouldn't bet against him. I think Facebook's a very decent chance of being a market beta over the next
decade. You have 2 billion people, close to one-third of the global population, logging onto your platform every month and is growing strongly, I wouldn't bet against it either, mate.
Motley Fool Money. Financial advice for real people, not trust fund hippies. Sign up for the newsletter at fool.com.au/MMM.
Speaking of simple segues,
that's right.
Look over there.
Sorry,
it's
mate.
Woolies and Coke it's, and stuff.
So here's the story. We keep coming back to this because you're a massive Coke nerd, and it is a
drinking one as we speak.
Them and Woolies attract a lot of attention on the market, and for good reason. These are companies that 5 years ago, if you wanted to sort of pick 2 examples of sort of big blue chip companies that had created phenomenal long-term wealth for shareholders, it'd be hard to sort of create a list without mentioning those two.
Yeah.
And yet, really, in recent times, they've been pretty awful. In fact, shares of both of them are really well off their all-time highs. And there's a lot of talk of sort of structural change here, disruption.
And not only well off their 5-year highs, both of them over 5 years have lost money for investors.
Yeah, they have.
If you held shares over 5 years for that period of time, you've got all this money on both, which is just phenomenal.
It is. It is. So it's worth talking about because this could be, you know, some of the world's biggest value traps or perhaps a really good opportunity here.
Yeah.
So let's talk a bit about this. So the latest tussle here is that, well, it's happened in stages here. First, Woolley said, no thanks to sugar-free Coke. Coke came out, hey, we've got this great new product. It's going to be wonderful.
It's Coke, no sugar, thank you.
Coke, no sugar, sorry.
Yes,
we're going to replace Coke Zero, sorry, mate. and Woolley said, no, well, good luck, but we're not going to stock it.
Correct.
So, great. That's not wonderful news. Now the Woolleys have come out and said, look, we stock 5 Mount Franklin products at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to get rid of 3 of them. And now, this is interesting for a couple of reasons. One, there's been this sort of shift away from these high-calorie sugary beverages into these healthier things.
Mm-hmm.
Mount Franklin's been a great success for Coke, and now even that's been under threat as well. Woolies obviously preferring to sell its own branded product that, you know, get rid of some Mount Franklin's, clears up some shelf space for them, and it is not good news whatsoever.
Mm.
Not only that, but we've talked about this before. Domino's dumped Coke as well, and they've moved across to Pepsi as well, which I know you're a... You're a big fan of that decision.
I am still dirty on that, just quietly.
You're never going to let that one go. So I guess the question we have to ask here, well, there's 2 things here. Who has the greater muscle in this war here, Woolies or Coke?
I think this is one of the big changes of the last decade, Andrew. I think we'll see more and more of this over time.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you look at the way this has come about and what's changed, I think, look, not stocking no sugar was kind of understandable. It's Coke, right? So who says no to Coke is the first thing. So the fact Woolies is saying no to Coke is meaningful. But it was a new, untested product. They've already got Red Coke. They've got Coke Zero. They've got Diet Coke. And Woolies are saying, guys, you're already in a phenomenal percentage of my shelf space.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna squeeze in another product, which is kind of the same as Diet Coke and Coke Zero, but just with a different
label. And by the way, we just had that Coke Life experience as well, which wasn't wonderful.
There was that. So I get that. That's what they want to try and do. Mm. Like, it makes sense, right? Kind of. The Mount Franklin thing is a whole different story. These are products that were on shelf, that were selling. They have a brand position. Coke have just dropped the price of Mount Franklin to try and generate some more sales growth from that brand. And Woolies actually actively taking it away. It's one thing to say, no, I'm not trying a new product. It's another thing to say, you're Coke, and I'm Woolies, and I'm taking 60% of your products off my shelves in the water range. And I think this is the real challenge, the change now between brand power. Once upon a time, we said, I know what I want to buy.
Yep.
Now, where will I buy it?
And, that, and that's why Coke had the power. Because, you know,
right.
If Woolies said no, they're only going to hurt
we
themselves.
Want Coke. We cut want off Vegemite, their nose. We want Milo. We want.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm not going to Woolies. I'll go to Coles if they're going to stock it.
Correct. Right. These days, the power is moving far, far more to rather than I know what I want, where am I going to get it? People are moving towards I know where I'm going. I wonder what I'll get when I get there.
Yep.
And that's a real change. This is the rise of retailer as brand, if you want to put a, some air quotes around it.
Yep.
Kmart. Six years ago now, I suppose.
Wonderful job of that, didn't they?
They basically got rid of every brand in their shops. Instead of selling $20, $25 Billabong t-shirt, Rip Curl t-shirts, whatever else. You can tell where I grew up in the 80s. getting rid of those and replaced them with basically $5 t-shirts with no branding. Little design on the front, a pattern or whatever, $5. $2 thongs, $10 shorts. You know, it was all about the price point. And that was proof positive, if you never needed it, that the market is saying, we don't really care what shirt we buy. We trust Kmart. We like the price. That's our decision made. The brand is ancillary to that.
Yes.
Aldi, another great example. Aldi turns up into the market. 90% of what they sell is either non-branded or branded with an Aldi home brand, a brand we've never heard of. And they're selling a heap of tinned spaghetti and tuna and everything, snow gear. Everything Aldi sells, other than a few key products like Milo and Vegemite and a couple others, they're all home brands that people are buying in droves. And this is a real change. Back in the day, the brand was the trust mark. Now the retailers are basically putting their own stamp of approval on those products, and people are prepared to buy whatever Woolies are selling. And Woolies in particular, to the Coke example, is going to replace Mount Franklin with home brand water. Why? Because they can say, A, our prices are lower.
They get more of a margin.
And B, we get more margin. And that's a really nice 1-2 punch. If you're Woolies, you're saying, I don't think my consumers will care which brand they buy. They want it cheap. They want it available. And I want to make some money. And that's why Mount Franklin goes and some Woolies home brand water or Woolworths Select water, whatever they put in there, goes in its place.
I've tussled with Coke for a long time. It's on a short list that I have there. I regularly go back and look at it. And a couple of things that I've run past you that I'm keen for your insights.
Before you do that,
Before
I forget, I own Coke personally, and it's also a recommendation of the service that I run. So listeners should be aware of that.
Yes, which is why I want to ask you, I guess.
Shoot me.
The first is that this is a volume game for them. I mean, they
goes all the way up to 11, Andrew. This is a Triple M podcast, buddy. We go all the way to 11 on volume.
Coke need to sell a hell of a lot of bottles and cans volume.
That volume. Okay, cool.
And the supermarkets account for a lot of that. So there's plenty of stuff in the so-called route trade where there's, you know, the corner shops and the takeaway
route
joints.
Trade, like
the route trade from root, potato, potato, tomato, tomato. Or not.
Depends.
Moving on.
Okay.
So that's potentially damaging. They've been trying to move into Indonesia for a while. That hasn't been wonderfully successful. There's been this big move away from sugary high calorie products. They haven't really plugged that gap. They're finding it difficult to sort of replace the volume that they're losing elsewhere.
Yep.
You know, I think it's a foolhardy person that, you know, goes short on Coca-Cola and bets against something. It's been such a phenomenal success story over 100 years plus, or whatever it is, if you're talking about the parent company. But I'm just thinking this: there is a lot of wind that these guys are sailing into. Can you alleviate any of those concerns?
Some. Okay. And I think this is the real question right now about how much do you pay and what the shares are worth.
Okay.
Frankly, the shares are off a lot. And so I like it a lot more at the current price than, frankly, the price I bought my shares and the price we recommended it because of this change in brand power. And frankly, right now, when I recommended the stock back in 2012 or 13, I want to say, unfortunately, the shares were higher. But I was of the belief that Coke would eventually end up, if not triumphant versus Woolworths, they would both manage to coexist reasonably well, that competition would fade away, that margins would improve, and things would go back to normal. And they haven't gone back to normal. And I think if there is anything here, it's the fact that consumers have continued post-GFC to demand everything on special, everything cheap. And that's really made a massive difference. And so the products that, you know, no one buys Coke except when it's on special these days.
Yeah.
And Woolies know that they can demand whatever discounts they want. Pepsi are happy to play that game as well. And Coke trying to maintain its margins simply can't do it. It can't maintain those margins and get growth at the same time. You mentioned the route trade is big. The market is huge when it comes to, you know, outside Australia as well. Indonesia in particular is going to be a massive opportunity for Coke. But right now, that's still tomorrow's story. And today's story is still very much one of the retailers are calling the shots. And for now, at least, I think that's going to make Coke's job in the Australian market a little bit tough. Now, I think the current price is reasonable for that opportunity. So on balance, I still think it's worth buying at today's prices. But right now, I wouldn't pay a heap more than today's prices to buy shares, simply because that future is more uncertain than it has been. Coke is a fantastic brand. Coke as a company has a wonderful distribution network. The question now is, how much is that worth? And I think we have to be fair and say less than it used to be.
Yeah, I love that distribution. That's another whole topic.
Motley Fool Money. For more, go to fool.com.au/MMM.
Zuck and Elon are having a bit of a tussle over AI at
Zuck
the moment.
Zuck and Elon?
So Mark Zuckerberg,
yes,
he's the founder, he's the creator of Facebook.
Right, right.
You might have heard of him.
Right.
And there's another guy called Elon Musk, Iron Man,
exactly.
I'm a bit of an Elon fan. I think he's pretty cool. And anyway, so he did Tesla.
Right. Are you a Tesla man? That's right.
Ford and Holden, come on, give me a Tesla any day. I don't care what you say. And so, Elon is a noted AI, not a skeptic.
No.
I think he very much thinks it's coming. But
yes,
he
yeah.
thinks it could herald the Armageddon, frankly, that it's
Armageddon out of here.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to Mars, so maybe he's really backing himself up there.
Indeed.
So read us the tweet that was sent around there, mate.
Oh, man, I love this tweet. So it was a tweet from Musk. Basically, what had happened was a reporter talked about Mark Zuckerberg's view on AI. And Mark Zuckerberg was reported as saying, Zuckerberg blasts Elon Musk warnings against artificial intelligence as pretty irresponsible. In other words, Zuck's calling out Musk and saying, dude, what do you know? It's completely irresponsible. And God love Elon Musk, but he replied. And he said something along the lines of, I've spoken to Mark about this, and his understanding of the subject is reasonably limited.
Ooh,
now, if those aren't, and I've got to tell you, look, I know you love Elon Musk. I love Elon Musk. He's doing some wonderful things. Solar, Tesla, probably
tunnels,
going to Mars.
Hyperloops, right, you right, name right. it. Yeah.
You know what I love? He's digging a tunnel.
Yeah.
The name of his tunnel company?
Boring.
The Boring Company. Get it? Boring.
It.
Get it?
Love anyway. It. Love it.
So he and frankly, he has lost more brain cells than you and I have together, Ram, I've got to tell you. And when he says that, there's two famous scientists, right? Behavioral finance economists. Amos Tversky and Daniel Kahneman, you might have heard of them, they won a Nobel Prize. One of their fellow academics said, the true test of intelligence is how long it takes you to realize that Amos Tversky is more intelligent than you are.
Right.
And that's a really, really nice line. That's the same with Elon Musk, right? It's like, the longer it takes you to realize that Musk knows more about you, the stupider you are. So
exactly.
When Zuck and Musk, and Zuck's no slouch, but...
No, God no.
I've got to say, when Zuck says, we've had a chat, you don't really know what you're talking about. That's pretty clear.
So we thought it was interesting, but at the same time, we've got to talk about AI. We haven't really touched it too much, and we'll have to come back because it's such a big subject on it. But we were talking during the week that the iPhone is 10 years old. Mm. If you can imagine that. I mean, before then, you could send an email on your phone if you had a BlackBerry and that was about it, and it was text sort of only.
Mm.
Now you've got a supercomputer in your pocket, and that was 10 years ago. So the next big mega trend that all the pundits are talking about is AI and how this cognition of everyday items is going to just radically, radically sort of transform the world.
Yep.
Now, before we sort of get to the inevitable Terminator references here, is that something that you're on board with? Is that when you look into your crystal ball 10 years out, do you see AI, the cognition of elements everywhere? Or?
Hang on a second, Andrew. I'll be back.
Oh, jeez. That is terrible.
Come on. You called me out. I had to go with it. Here's the thing about AI. I found another tweet from Musk. And he talked about things are improving in terms of tech. What he says exponentially. In other words, each step is a greater improvement than the step before it. So an exponential curve, you got one, then by two, then by four, then by eight, and it becomes this compounding machine, right? And he says we're in a double exponential phase, that hardware and software are both increasing at an exponential rate. And that's why he's so worried, is that the genie coming out of the bottle, by the time the genie is let out of the bottle, we'll have microseconds to get it back in. And that's the real challenge. So yes, we can be thoughtless about it. We can say, well, worry about it when it happens. The problem is by the time it happens, as you said, Andrew, it will be too late. And frankly, even the point at which we realize it's about to happen is probably, I don't know, it's days, weeks, months before it actually does happen. So the time we get to start responding to the very real potential threat, it'll be effectively over. We just won't get our act together in time.
Wait a sec. Are you talking about the threat to humanity here, or are we talking about sort of some industry consequences?
Here's Musk's point. Musk isn't worried about industry consequences.
Yeah.
Musk is genuinely saying he believes we have the potential to effectively have thinking machines who can make their own decisions. Mm. And by that time, that is genuinely a threat to humanity. And it sounds like a conspiracy theory. It sounds like that kind of tinfoil hat wearing whatever, but
just a little bit.
Well, here's the thing, right? It's like, it's one of those things where even if the chance is small, the results of that are catastrophic. Yeah, and that's Musk's point. Are you really sure you don't want insurance against this? Because if you don't have it and the worst happens, you are completely screwed.
Okay.
And again, if this was anybody else other than Elon Musk saying, you kind of go, yeah. This is Elon Musk, right? And it almost is its own category.
Yeah.
You know, the guy behind electric cars were coming for decades, right? Yeah. In fact, some of the first cars were electric, as it turns out.
But great documentary called "What Happened to the Electric Cars?"
Or "Who Killed the Electric?"
Who killed the? That's the one. Thank you.
Correct. And so that you know, and it was killed.
Yeah.
And then Musk, single-handedly and with a lot of money, bought the whole thing back to the point where Norway, now Great Britain, are saying no internal combustion engines to be sold after certain times. Volvo was already not only doing hybrid or electric.
Yeah.
Musk has with power prices and other things, has really pushed this forward. And that's a real challenge for humanity, I think.
Yeah. Oh, geez, so much to talk about that. I tell you what, we'll come back maybe next week. Let's talk
humanity.
Let's talk about the investment
that was my
ramifications.
Best ever segue.
Oh mate,
you completely.
It's a low bar, so I guess I can give you that one.
You're looking for me over my trailer.
Real money advice from real people, not just a couple of dicks with a Porsche. Get more at fool.com.au/MMM.
Can you give me a sound effect, please?
Boom tish?
No. Oh God, it's terrible. You can tell how much we rehearse on this. It's time for our high horse, and it's my turn this week.
Seamless.
And I'm going to wax lyrical about market forecasts and how they get under my skin. So all throughout the year, anywhere you see someone being interviewed in a fancy suit, it's like, where is the market going to be at the end of the year? Where is the market going to be by Christmas? What's the market going to end this financial year on?
That's not unreasonable, is it?
It's a great question. God knows if I had the answer to that, I'd be a ridiculously rich man. Well,
if you don't know the answer, what the hell are you doing on a finance podcast?
Well, it's just, for my money, it is something that is unknowable. So let's start at the beginning. When people talk about the market, they're probably talking about the All Ords or the S&P ASX 200, one of the major indices.
Yep.
You know, what is it, 5,700 or something at the moment? And they'll say, well, you know, so there's a difference between someone sort of saying, listen, I'm not really sure, but I think the market is, you know, not necessarily overvalued. Is one thing. But what you find increasingly is someone will say, yeah, I think the market will be 5,842.3 by the end of the year. Now, why it gets under my skin is, one, there's no way you can possibly know that. Two, we've got decades, frankly, of really good experience here where every time we ask these knuckleheads these questions, they are always wrong. And yet they get asked the question again and again and again and again. The second thing is, well, what does it actually matter anyway? I mean, unless you're investing in the index proper, the stocks that you happen, there's 500 stocks, give or take, within the All Ordinaries Index. You know, if you've got a portfolio of 10, 20, 30 stocks, it's not necessarily going to correlate highly with what that market is doing.
Okay, but if I'm an index investor, I've got an ETF, which is a Vanguard total market ETF, surely I care about it then.
Mate, if you are investing, I think index investing is a wonderful thing for the record. But if you're looking to put money in an index for a one-year holding period, you need your head read. It is roll of the dice. We know statistically one in every 3 years the market is going to be. The market's had phenomenal long-term success, but one in every 3 years is a bit of a shocker. And sometimes that can be really rough. So you are taking a big part of your life savings and saying, yeah, 66% odds are good. I'll take that and I'm going to roll the dice. I think it's insane. So there's very, very good evidence to suggest that as your holding period increases, the chance of loss diminishes very, very rapidly indeed. So whatever someone thinks the market is going to be at the end of the year has no practical value. Very, very, very good evidence to suggest that they're probably going to be wildly wrong. And yet next year, we're all going to ask them the same question again. It's a waste of time.
Why would listeners bother listening to us if we don't know what the market's going to do? That's the only reason you invest, is because you have a view and you think you can make money by investing sensibly. And if you can't work out where the market's going to go, how can you work out where anything's going to go?
Mate, it's the difference between investing and speculation. Speculation is just saying, I think that this will be higher just because. And investing is basically, well, to get completely nerdy, is it's looking at the discounted value of all future cash flows and paying a reasonable price for that.
That clicking sound is people turning off.
Well, fair enough too, I suppose. But look, if I'm buying, and this is what gets me a lot with property, and again, you know my thoughts on that as well. So when you're buying something just because you think it's going to be higher next year, rather than I think I'm going to get a good rental yield and other things, the decision becomes one of pure speculation. And again, history and the academics and anyone who's ever spent more than half a second looking at this will tell you it's a mug's game and you're going to probably lose a very serious sum of your money.
Okay, but you still haven't told me, if we can't tell people where the market's going to be at the end of the year, why should they invest with us?
Well, because we're not in the business of providing a speculation. So what matters to us is, will the businesses we invest in be worth in the future, and will they provide a regular, attractive, ongoing return? Now, so for me, if we talked about Coke before, you're obviously a believer in Coke. Do you know where Coke is going to be tomorrow, next month, next year? I guarantee you don't. But you've obviously firmly of the view that over time its earnings will justify its current share price, and that relative to the money you put into that investment, you will get more out in terms of net present value.
Yeah, I think that's it. Let me try and put that in play.
Sorry,
English,
but that was
the non-Tesla
bit...
owners out there. Okay. What we're really saying is we don't know with any certainty over short periods of time what's going to happen.
Or no one does, not just we.
And we don't know anything. We don't know over long term what things are going to do. But we can reasonably put the odds in our favor more often than not over a long enough period of time to say a quality business with quality prospects and a reasonable price is likely to beat the market given a long enough period of time when the market stops being a voting machine and starts being a weighing machine.
I think a good analogy is with the weather. You can have the world's best meteorologist and he is not going to be able to tell you what the weather is going to be like four Thursdays from now. He's going to be a complete stab in the dark. But he's going to be able to tell you pretty confidently that July is going to be colder than December. And I think that's probably what we're trying to do here. We're looking at the climate more than the day-to-day weather. And we're not going to try and, you know, whether it's going to rain or not, but we are trying to work out whether the sun will more or less be rising in the future, I guess. That's terrible.
Sun will rise tomorrow.
Yeah, that's it. Let's move on. In fact, let's end it right there. Get the hell out of Dodge while the getting's good. Mate, thank you again for your time. Remember, listeners, you can subscribe to Motley Fool Money Podcast through iTunes or your favorite Android podcast app. And if you like what we're doing, please give us 5 stars.
And go to www.fool.com.au/MMM if you want to subscribe. And you should to our free newsletter.
Thank you very much. And until next week, fool on.
Fool on.
The Motley Fool and people appearing in this program may have positions in the companies mentioned. General advice only. Please speak to your financial professional to understand how it may pertain to your situation. Subscribe to the free newsletter at fool.com.au/MMM. The Motley Fool operates under Financial Services License 400691.